have known that we've been in this series called Frontline, and we have been basing this on this statistic that 6% of people in the United Kingdom attend church at least once a month. And that 6% is represented by those six dots, a gathered community. And today around the United Kingdom, those 6%, or most of them, will be gathering in different places and spaces with different groups of people. And we can be assured that we're not the only congregation gathering, that there is many others. There are many others around our community. But of course, after Sunday, then that 6% gets scattered into the 94%. And all of us are on what we've called front lines. We're in places where we meet with people who are not part of the gathered community of faith, whether that's in your workplace, with your family, or in other activities that you're part of. There is a front line for everybody, whether you're caring for elderly relatives or whether you're caring for grandchildren or neighbours or people who you just connect with every single day. And so all of us are part of the scattered community as well. But today I want to think about that together is the place that we grow, and I want to pick up on this passage from Hebrews. Now, if I gave you all a bit of paper today, and maybe I should have done, but it's an exercise for you perhaps at home during this week. If you were to plot a graph of the levels of faith that you have had during the journey of faith that you've had, I wonder what sort of graph it would look like. You know, so you've got one axis, which is the level of faith from 0 to 100%. And then you've got another axis, which is the length of time since you became a Christian. So the bottom bit is the starting point, and so it goes on to today. I wonder what sort of graph you would have. Now, I don't know the technical names for all these graphs, but I'm guessing some of us, it would be a nice steady line from the corner to where we are now, where our faith has gradually been increasing. For others of us, maybe we had an experience of Jesus, came to faith, and our faith level was already halfway up, and we've maintained that level of faith throughout our Christian experience. Some of you, maybe you had a great experience of faith, and it was like 100% when you started, and it's been going downhill ever since. Hopefully you're not at the bottom yet, but if you are at the bottom today, I want you to be encouraged today. You're still here, which is good, but maybe that's been the experience. Some of you, you probably had like a mountain range. Have you a faith? You know, sharp upturn and then a sharp downturn and an upturn, depending on what's been happening in your life. And others of you, I can see, have had a very wavy experience. You know, a nice gentle wave of faith during your life. You know, we've all had a different thing. And of course, that changes, doesn't it? It changes often because of what our circumstances are happening. Now, we know it shouldn't happen because of circumstances, but I'm sure that it has for many of us here today. How we feel on any given day, whether we've had a good night's sleep or not, or what we're heading. Maybe there's pressure from outsiders that has squeezed that level of faith or challenged it to a point where maybe we've been dipping a little bit. Pressure from family or workplaces or friends or society. But we've all had moments when our faith has been pushing 100% as well. When maybe it's gone to 11 out of 10 rather than just right at the top. When we've believed every promise of God, every promise he's ever given, when we've declared an undying and unending love for God, intending to give our whole life to him, whatever it is that he asks of us, we are going to do it and serve him. We're going to give everything back to him. And we'll have had moments like that in our lives as well. But then something happens. And it's as if the air has been let out of the tires, or the heat has been turned down, or the wind has stopped blowing in our sails, and we're just adrift. I mean, we know what it feels like to be at our best. We've had moments when our faith level has been extremely high, and we are going to conquer the world, of course. But there are times when we know it doesn't quite feel as it should. And to coin a phrase from a Tom Jones song, it's not unusual. It's not unusual. Was that Tom Jones? Yeah. Tom Jones. It was Tom Jones. It's not unusual. And that's why the writer of this book of Hebrews says to those, I want you to have a full assurance of faith. To this diverse community that had stepped across the sort of barrier of was Jesus the Messiah, that stepped across that and believed it, and we're going to live out what it looked like to be a Christ follower. He wants them to have a full assurance of faith. The confidence to enter the most holy place, because the veil of the temple has been torn in two through the cross, through the death and resurrection of Jesus. Now imagine to a Jew who was brought up knowing that the Holy of Holies had a vast thick curtain in front of it, and only the priest was able to go through that curtain on one day of a year, on the Day of Atonement. Imagine them hearing this, that they could draw near to God because the curtain is no longer there. That's a major shift in belief and understanding. But the writer is saying you can have that confidence because this is about Jesus and what he has done. You know, I understand the high priest used to have a rope around his ankle when he went into the Holy of Holies, because if he died while he was inside, nobody else could go in and get him out. So they could drag him out without going in. It was that holy. And here's the writer saying, you can draw near. You can enter this holy place. I want you to have a full assurance of this faith that you have. But he goes on to say, to give us hints about how that can happen. How we can have the full assurance, not only because of what Jesus has done, but because we have one another as well. And the work of the gathered congregation is so important to all of us, to have that measure of faith that we long for and that God longs for us to have as well. That we do this better together. We keep this level of faith higher when we spend time together as well. And that's the encouragement when we go out onto our front lines, to know that we are not on our own. And the writer gives us very helpfully three things. He must have known that preachers were coming who would love 3 points. Firstly, hold unswervingly to the hope that we profess. Now, this word hold in Hebrew means to hold fast. It's to hold course. It's like steering a ship and not deviating from the line that you're heading on to get to your destination. Don't become weaker. Don't become constant, unwavering, unfaltering, unhesitating, unflinching. Hold unswervingly to the faith, to the hope that you profess. No matter what happens, make a commitment, a determination that whatever is happening in your front line, then hold to this. The ups and downs, the successes and disappointments may well come on our line, but through it all, we're going to hold on. Whatever is happening, whatever storms are coming, whatever circumstances we face, we are going to hold on to this hope that we can have. Now, secondly, he talks about consider how we may spur one another on towards love and good deeds. Here's the one of many one another's in the New Testament, to hold on with one another and spur one another on, to provoke one another, to incite one another, to cheer one another on when we're on those front lines. Galatians 6:9 says, let us not become weary in doing good, for proper time we will reap the harvest if we do not give up. Thinking about this phrase, it drew my mind back to Abraham. If you know the story of Abraham, God called him to bless the world, to be the father of nations. But of course, Abraham had a moment when he felt like giving up, because Jesus had promised him a son, but no son had appeared. It had taken years and years, and he felt like giving up. In fact, he did give up on God's promise and decided to take matters into his own hands. See, God had promised Abraham a nation, but Abraham had lowered his expectations, and he just wanted an heir. That was all he wanted. He thought that was the answer to it. But God has a bigger picture, and God has a bigger picture for all of us as well. Because he's doing something more than we can even dare to dream or imagine, and he wants us to be part of it. And that's why we need to encourage one another. That's why we need to spur one another on to love and good deeds, because God has more to do through every one of us. And at times when we can't see what's happening, at times when we perhaps lose sight or we try and diminish the call of God in our lives, then that's the time when we need people around us who are going to lift us up and spur us on to what God has called, the promise that he's given to us. I mean, sometimes you pray the same prayer and nothing changes. Have you ever had that experience? You're praying the same prayer time after time after time and nothing changes. And someone in this congregation needs to tell you, keep praying. Keep praying. Spur one another on. Keep praying. I'm guessing some of you here, you've given out the same invitation to come to an event to hear about Jesus time and time and time again. And you're praying for that person and you're taking the initiative to make an invitation, and every time it's rejected. And someone in this congregation needs to tell you to give them another invitation, to keep going, to spur you on to love and good deeds. Some of you in the workplace, or perhaps where you volunteer, you make a cup of tea for your colleague every single day and they never say thank you to you. Someone needs to tell you to make another cup of tea, to spur you on to love and good deeds. Don't let anyone lower the expectation that God has given you for how he wants to use you in the places that you are. The act of love, that good deed. But we need one another to say one more time, keep going. Let's do it again. What's so amazing about this story of Abraham is a little later on in Genesis chapter 15, there's a little moment when God sort of intervenes. It's Genesis 15. Oh, it's there. It is in my Bible. That's good. Genesis 15:1. After this, the word of the Lord came to Abraham in a vision. Do not be afraid, Abraham. I am your shield, your very great reward. But Abraham said, Sovereign Lord, what can you give me since I remain childless? And the one who will inherit my estate is Eliezer of Damascus, not the person God wanted. And Abraham said, you've given me no children, so a servant in my household will be my heir. And then the word of the Lord came to him. This man will not be your heir, but a son who is your own flesh and blood will be your heir. There's the promise again. And God has given it to him, but I don't know how much Abraham believes about it. I don't see you working, God. I don't see it happening. I'm fed up of doing these love and good deeds that you tell me I should do. You told me about nations. I don't even see a son beginning. And then in Genesis 15 and verse 5, this is what God does. He took him outside. Where was Abraham when he was bemoaning the lack of what God was doing? He was inside. He was inside his tent. He had that narrower vision of what was going to do, God was going to do, because he was in his tent. And God took him outside. I'd love to have been a fly on the tent flap that night when God took him outside. Abraham, it's time to break out of your limited perspective, to stop wavering, take hold of your unmet expectations again. God took him outside and said, look up at the sky and count the stars. If indeed you can count them, then he said to him, so shall your offspring be. Sometimes we have to get out of our tent to see what God is doing. Sometimes instead of getting stuck in one place and feeling, God, you're not doing anything, we need to lift our eyes outside the tent to see the full extent as to what God's promises really are. He tells him to count the stars. He could never have done it. But this is the extent of God's promises still to us today. So spur one another on, won't you? Find someone who needs to be taken out of the tent, won't you? To lift their eyes to what God has already promised them. The third thing he says is, don't give up meeting together, but encouraging one another. We need one another, perhaps more than ever, to find that place of encouragement, to find that place where we know we're part of something bigger, where we meet together, whether that's Sunday or whether that's in groups during the week or prayer meetings. Whenever we gather together, there's an opportunity for us to look up at the sky, to lift our eyes together, to see what God's promises are still for us each particular day. We're not called to be a holy huddle, to just stay internal, but we gather in order to be scattered, to be the scattered people of God with a vision for the more that God has in store. And communion is a reminder of that, isn't it? Every time we share communion, we're reminded that we're part of this family. We draw near to Jesus. We enter the holy place through the blood that he has given for us with confidence. We come confessing our sins for the times when we've wavered, when we've given up, when we stayed in the tent. And we capture again the vision that God has given for us, his people, his call to grow together as well. So if your hold is a little bit tentative, hold unswervingly. Get a grip of God again. If you've lowered your expectations and given up with love and good deeds, get somebody close to you to take you out of the tent and lift your eyes up. And let's not stop meeting together and encouraging one another as we do that. You being here encourages the person you're sat next to. You being here continues to encourage. When you meet with each other, you encourage one another. So let's do that together and continue to see God do amazing things.